too want to bring Christian greetings to each one this morning. Welcome our visitors and all to worship with us here. We've had two psalms read to us this morning, and in both of these psalms, the last verse is a good accumulation of all the points that were made in the verses there. The one that Brother Murray read here was, "Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore." And the one that Brother Joe read this morning in devotions is, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." Certainly beautiful words for both of those, and should be our heart's desire on that. This morning I'd like to title the message, "Children Able to Stand," taken from Daniel chapter 1. Yesterday, we got a little text message with a video in it from Joy, and she was sending us a picture of their little Jared. He's almost 3 months old, but he was just kicking and cooing and smiling, and he was looking at himself in the mirror, and he liked what he saw, and he was just having a good time with that. And I'm sure she didn't know I was going to use this as a sermon illustration, but it was a beautiful little picture there. He was just happy as could be looking at that mirror. And the Bible tells us, or we're told, that God's Word is a mirror. And he uses that as a number of different ways. And I don't know what you think about when you think of God's Word as a mirror, and you're looking into this, and you're seeing yourself, and I'm seeing myself. One of my first thoughts goes to Jeremiah 17, verse 9, where it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" The next verse there gives us somewhat of an answer to that. But our heart is not pretty by itself. It needs to be transformed. And that's what we want to look at this morning. Children able to stand. Let's turn our Bibles to Daniel chapter 1. Excuse me. In Daniel chapter 1, we have a very familiar story, but it's a very beautiful story. A beautiful story of faithfulness to God, of the things that matter most. The preschool children had a verse this morning that they probably didn't understand very well. And probably it's a continuing understanding for all of us, and no matter where we are in our life. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." That is one of the absolutes that we have to gauge our life by. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." I'm going to read just a few verses here of the first chapter, book of Daniel. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels unto the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. And now listen to verse 4. "Children in whom there is no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and to whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans." You know, that sounds like a recipe for disaster. Here they were looking for children that were top-notch. They were good-looking. They were smart. They were skillful. They were cunning. They were teachable. They had to have everything. And they were going to take these children and teach them the learning and the literature of the Chaldeans. And to us today, that would be a recipe for disaster, wouldn't it? It just sounds like that. Children in whom there was no blemish. You know, not only were the children as perfect as could be, or as nearly perfect as they could be, they were also taken away from their parents and no longer had parental guidance. History tells us that these would have been 12 to 14 years old. And here they are, and they're taken. They're going to be under this kind of tutelage for 3 years, and then they're going to stand in the king's court. Children able to stand. I'd like to just add a subtitle, The Making of a Moral Compass. How is a moral compass? What is a moral compass? It's the ability to know what is right and wrong and the direction to carry it out with that comes from where? Does it come from within? Does it come from the right kind of teaching? Does it come with the right kind of environment? Does it come with the right kind of parental values? I've said myself that values are absorbed as much as they are taught. And I think that's right. But there's something more than that, because here these young men were 12 to 14 years old, taken away from their parents. And what happens to them? We know the story because that's one of the most common stories in the Bible, is the story of Daniel in the lion's den, how he stood firm, the story of the three Hebrew children in chapter 3. But here they were, taken away from their parents and in a very difficult situation. But they were the ones that were some that held true. I'd like to, Daniel asked for lenience in this. It says in verse 5, the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them at the end of 3 years, they might stand thereof before the king. And he said, in verse 8 it says, he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meat. And he asked the prince of the eunuchs there if he could make an exception there and just give him him and them, I presume, vegetables and water. And that's what he did. And he said, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, verse 12. And let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. He was willing to give this judgment into this man's hand. And he didn't say what he would do beyond that. But he was confident in his God. And he was confident that he was going the right direction. And that's what happened. And then in verse 17 it says, As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs came and brought them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them, and he found them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm, that were in all his realm. Isn't that quite a statement for the king to make, or to be written here? These Hebrews that wouldn't take the king's meat were 10 times better than all of the others. And it's very interesting that these people placed a lot of emphasis on understanding dreams. And when the king had a dream that departed from him, he asked not only for the interpretation, but he asked for them to remember the dream, and they couldn't. This is something that they were actually skilled in, interpreting dreams. They were unable to, but Daniel was able to. And when Daniel had the chance to speak, he said, "It wasn't me, but there is a God that reveals secrets." Their anchor point was that they had no other God before them. They knew that they were going to stand, they knew who God was. There was a very clear understanding who God was. And that was the first thing that guided them. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." Even without parental guidance and without a big group of peers, even without going to the synagogue, they had something within them that guided them in the way when they needed it. We have another man. We have the story of Joseph, and that is in Genesis. He went from being a favored son to a slave and then a prisoner. And in all of that, he was a model of righteousness. He was a model of forgiveness. We have no other person in the Bible that so closely parallels the life of Jesus and his attitude of forgiveness than we do of Joseph. And yet he was a man that had tremendous disadvantages. Unjust. He was treated unjustly. And yet he says that it was God that put him there. His focus was on the big picture in his life. It was God that put him there. In our Sunday school lesson, we're looking at the life of Stephen. In some respects, it looks like it may have been a waste. You know, there he was preaching, and he could have used mightily of God. But his own life, he didn't count dear, and he was extolling the virtues of God, and he was preaching Jesus to them. Joseph was a man that, almost like no other character we have in the Scripture, shows us how to forgive in a Christ-like way. Absolutely no reserve. His brothers accepted forgiveness from Joseph when there was no other way to it. But when their father died, they thought, "Joseph is just waiting for this time." And so they sent a messenger to him and said that, our father commanded that you would forgive, even after he's gone. And he was heartbroken. And it says he wept. And he just, his forgiveness was complete. It was 100%. And it didn't matter what happened there. Joseph, a man that grew up in very, very unfavorable circumstances, away from his parents, away from godly influence. And yet there was something in his heart that kept him going the right direction, and he knew who God was. That's what it was. We have the story of Joshua and Caleb in Numbers 13. A very inspirational story. Let's turn to Numbers 13 and read how God had, through Moses, had chosen a number of men to go search out the land of Canaan. Numbers 13 and verse 17, it says, "And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get ye up out of the way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, or few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that dwell in, whether they be in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether it be wood therein or not, and be of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. And so they went up, and they searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob. And the men came to Hamath, and they ascended by the south, and came to Hebron. And then in verse 23 it says, And they came down to the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes. And they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought the pomegranates and of the figs. And I just always have to marvel at this one verse. You know, today we have people that specialize in crop production, fruit production, and so on. And I don't know, I have never seen a cluster of grapes so big that it would take two people to carry it. They put it between them on a staff. It's just amazing to see that. That's the kind of land that they were going into. That's what was there. All 10 of these people saw this cluster of grapes. Maybe they even helped carry it. But when they returned after searching the land for 40 days, 10 of those spies had a bad report. Joshua and Caleb said, they can do it. They can take this. And their confidence was in God. And they said, if God is pleased with us, you know, the obstacles that were in their way were going to be nothing. But they were the ones that were in the minority. The rest of those said that we be not able to go up against them. They're stronger, the people are stronger, the giants are there, and all they saw were obstacles. But it's a blessing to me to read this chapter 14 and verse 24. It says, But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereinto he went, and his seed shall possess it. And we know that that was true, that when those people were mistrustful of God, when they saw when they heard the report, and their heart was turned away from God, they doubted that God would do what he said he would. They doubted that God would do what he said he would, and they wanted to actually go back to Egypt. And God sent a pestilence that killed many people, including the 10 spies that were not right with him there. But in spite of the fact that the odds were against them, Caleb was a man that was faithful. And when Israel went back into Canaan 40 years later, he brought to Joshua and he reminded him that God had given him that inheritance there. And it's just a beautiful picture of faithfulness. Caleb was a faithful man. And in spite of the fact that he came from they lived through unfavorable conditions, he himself was faithful. His compass pointed him to God, because God was the one that he was counting on. Moses was a man that in Hebrews it says he chose to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Moses had all the luxury and the pleasure that this world could offer him. He had everything. He had education. He had prestige. He was in Pharaoh's court. He had everything that could be offered. And And no doubt he was by himself there as in Pharaoh's court there, at least a very highly favored Hebrew. And according to my thinking today, that would have been a recipe for spoiling and disaster. He just couldn't make it beyond that. And yet Moses did. He turned everything aside, and he chose, and his testimony that we have in Hebrews 11 is that he chose to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. So what does it take in the making of a moral compass? It takes a choice to make there. When David was anointed king, he was not the likely-looking man that Samuel was looking for. Must be his older brothers were. And God told Samuel at that point, he said, "The Lord, look not unto his countenance." The Lord said unto Samuel, "Look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart." And we're familiar with that verse. We're familiar with the story. But it continues to give light. In Jeremiah 17, verse 10, right after the verse that I quoted earlier, where it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, who can know it?" The next verse says, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. And, you know, maybe that language is a little obscure, but what it's saying exactly is that the Lord knows our motives. He knows what's in our heart. He knows what motivates us, and he is going to judge us according to what we do, according to the fruit of our doings. And so it's important, not just that we do what's right, that is terribly important, but that we are motivated in the right way, that we have the right motivations for doing what is right. We have at least in Daniel, we have the four Hebrew, we have Daniel and the three Hebrew, the other three that were involved there, that were in terrible conditions, and yet they proved themselves true. We have the story of Joseph. We have the story of Moses. We have the story of Joshua and Caleb. All of these men in the Old Testament were men that had tremendous disadvantages, and yet they came through as shining examples of godliness and honor. And some of the things that they would have had in common were that they had a strong sense of who God was. They had a vision of something bigger than themselves. One of the stories, while here in the story of Joshua and Caleb holding true, God had told Moses, he said, "Let me destroy these people, and I will raise a nation that will be bigger and better after you." And Moses said, "Well, then the Egyptians will say that God was not able to take them into the land." And I just have to marvel at the humility and the vision that Moses had. He knew exactly what would happen. And instead of saying, "Yeah, let's do that," you know, he said, "No. Look at what's going to happen to your great name." And he was concerned about the name of God. And that's the thing that's going to be a big part of a moral compass, is to have the vision to see what the big picture is. How is this going to affect God's name? And then it's also going to be a willingness to surrender personal gain for a greater good. We see that in the life of Moses, where he saw that as a surrender for a greater good that God had intended. I've shared the story of Paul Brand earlier. Let me just say a few things about that. Paul Brand was a man that was a boy at 9 years old that he left his parents, or his parents left him in England. They were missionaries in India, both of them very dedicated doctors, and with the promise of seeing him after 3 years. He was staying with relatives, and his six-year-old sister chose to stay with him rather than be away from him for those 3 years. She would have not needed to leave her parents early, but she chose to because she wanted to be with her brother. And after 3 years, the parents gave up their plans for a furlough to someone that needed it more, they thought. And so there was a tremendous disappointment in the lives of the two Brand children. But they looked forward to the next 3 years. And before, just as that was going to happen, the father got sick and died very quickly. He was sending a letter every week to his children, and they continued to get these letters after he was gone. But he was gone. So at nine, they left. They saw them for the last time and was able to communicate for a number of years, and then he was gone before he ever saw them again. Well, Paul Brand was used of the Lord in a tremendous way in the work of dealing with leprosy patients and so on. He did a tremendous work that is still going on today. A man that was faithful against all odds, but God was able to use him. Excuse me. God was able to use him in spite of the fact that he had all those difficulties in his life. And maybe because of those difficulties, he was able to use him. He was not a committed person as a young man. He had a lot of trouble. He had a lot of things that he dealt with. He dealt with bitterness and the why God would allow this kind of thing. And yet he chose to follow the Lord in spite of the fact that he didn't understand why these things. He chose to serve the Lord in spite of the fact that he didn't understand why these things happened, but then in turn, God used him in a tremendous way. A few years ago, we went through a store in Ohio that's P. Graham Dunn. Many of you have mottos that these people make in your homes. But there's a factory there that you can tour, and there's interesting stories. This was from a Christian, this is a Christian organization, the people that make those mottos. And they also told a story of a young person, a missionary couple, that had left their 4-year-old or 5-year-old girl to come to Canada to study. To go to school while they were on the mission field. Seems so counterproductive. And yet, in spite of the fact that they had these difficult ways, she was a very faithful servant of the Lord, too, and grew up to be useful in lots of ways. So what is it that makes a difference in a person's life? Here we got good environment, good teaching, good training, and sometimes things go wrong. It's nothing. Nothing can take the person, can take the place of your personal choice to walk with God. There is nothing that cannot be trained into you where you'll do that automatically. we have to have an awareness of absolutes, and those two are going to be that all of us are going to give an account to God, and that the Word of God is going to stand. Jesus said that heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. And so we can base our life, we can give our, we can base everything we have on what the word stands. Hard times can be a time of refining, can be a time of drawing us close to God. I think maybe Harold Dean shared with us the story of Joseph Scriven. I'm not sure if that was, he had so many stories, I don't remember if that was one of them or not. But I just recently heard that again, and it was just such a blessing. He wrote, "What a friend we have in Jesus." And he was a man that lived in Ireland, and was he had a lot of material blessings in his life too. He was educated. He was rich. He was well known, and there were a lot of things going for him. But he left Ireland when he was 25 years old, and one of the reasons was is just the day before he was to be married, his fiance was coming to meet him, and she drowned as she was crossing the river. The horse had jumped, and she fell, hit her head on a rock, and was unconscious. And he was there just in time to see her body being pulled from the water. Devastating loss. Well, he went to Canada, to Port Hope, there in Canada. And he was, and he wrote the words to this song, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." He sent them to his mother when she was really ill, but he never published them as a song. And then some years later, he was, there was another girl in his life that came, and he was just ready to get married to her. And she died very suddenly of pneumonia. And backing up just a little bit, right after he lost his first fiance, he dedicated his life to the service of others, and he was known as the Good Samaritan of Port Hope. And he would do everything from cutting wood to fixing roofs to just being a handyman for people. He didn't need the money, and he worked for people that couldn't afford to pay for his service. And so eventually he became known as the Good Samaritan of Port Hope. He was dedicated his life. And then he was prepared to get married again, and just seems so unreal, but this person also died very quickly of pneumonia. And when a friend came to see Joseph when he was sick, he saw these words written on paper, and he said, "Who wrote these beautiful words?" And Joseph said, "The Lord and I." And after he was gone, there was put to music, and this is what we sing today. What a friend we have in Jesus. And I'd like to sing that now. I'd like to ask a song leader to lead that, number 226 in the church hymn. Number 226 in the church hymn. When we know what this person went through, it makes the words that we sing so much more meaningful. certainly a beautiful testimony to what God can do, and Jesus as a friend. And this Joseph Scriven found that friend in Jesus. In spite of the very, very difficult things that he faced, he found God faithful. And you know, I believe that when we have our anchor in will stand, and then we can experience that same. I'd like to just read the first Psalm. Psalm 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. I believe that Psalm tells us very clearly that the godly man is one whose delight is in the law of the Lord. The one who delights in knowing God and has an understanding of who God is. And in doing that, that's going to stand. I'm impressed with the lives of men who, against all odds, were faithful to the Lord. And the one thing that I think we find in common with all of them is they knew who God was. They knew where the absolute stood, and they were willing to stand on that. And I believe that holds true for us today in 2016 as well as it did many years ago. And so let's pass that on. Let's pass that heritage on to our children. Knowing who God is, children able to stand. Let's come to the Lord in prayer.